Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Lord is like a great blazing fire, and the living entities are like small sparks of that fire. Please repeat. The Lord is like a great blazing fire, and the living entities are like small sparks of that fire. Although sparks and a big fire are both fire and both have the power to burn, the burning power of the fire and that of the spark are not the same. Why should one artificially try to become like a big fire, although by constitution he is like a small spark? It is due to ignorance. One should therefore understand that neither the Supreme Personality of Godhead nor the small spark-like living entities have anything to do with matter. But when the spiritual spark comes in contact with the material world, his fiery quality is extinguished. That is the position of the conditioned souls. Because they are in touch with the material world, their spiritual quality is almost dead. But because these spiritual sparks are all Krishna's parts and parcels, as the Lord states in the Bhagavad Gita, Mamai Vangsha, they can revive their original position by getting free from material contact. This is pure philosophical understanding. In the Bhagavad Gita, the spiritual sparks are declared to be sanatana, eternal. Therefore, the material energy, maya, cannot affect their constitutional position. Someone may argue, why is there a need to create the spiritual sparks? The answer can be given in this way. Since the Absolute Personality of Godhead is omnipotent, he has both unlimited and limited potencies. This is the meaning of omnipotent. To be omnipotent, he must have not only unlimited potencies, but limited potencies also. Thus, to exhibit his omnipotence, he displays both. The living entities are endowed with limited potency, although they are part of the Lord. The Lord displays the spiritual world by his unlimited potencies, whereas by his limited potencies, the material world is displayed. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 5, the Lord says, Apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidi me param jiva bhuta maha baho yayidang daryate jagat. Besides these inferior energies, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mine, which comprises all living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. The Jiva Bhuta, the living entities, control this material world with their limited potencies. Generally, people are bewildered by the activities of scientists and technologists. Due to Maya, they think that there is no need of God and that they can do everything and anything, but actually, they cannot. Since this cosmic manifestation is limited, their existence is also limited. Everything in this material world is limited. And for this reason, there is creation, sustenance, and dissolution. However, in the world of unlimited energy, the spiritual world, there is neither creation nor destruction. If the personality of Godhead did not possess both limited and unlimited energies, he could not be called omnipotent. Anor Aniyan Mahato Mayan. The Lord is greater than the greatest and smaller than the smallest. He is smaller than the smallest in the form of the living entities and greater than the greatest in his form of Krishna. If there were no one to control, there would be no meaning to the conception of the Supreme Controller, Ishwara, just as there is no meaning to a king without his subjects. If all the subjects became king, there would be no distinction between the king and an ordinary citizen. Thus, for the Lord to be the Supreme Controller, there must be a creation to control. The basic principle for the existence of the living entities is called chit-vilasa, or spiritual pleasure. The omnipotent Lord displays his pleasure potency as the living entities. The Lord is described in the Vedanta Sutra 1.1.12 as Ananda Mayo Vyasat. He is by nature the reservoir of all pleasures. And because he wants to enjoy pleasure, there must be energies to give him pleasure or supply him the impetus for pleasure. This is a perfect philosophical understanding of the Absolute Truth. Om Ajnana Tamrandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapatam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadam Ayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastachadi Satarnine Vanchakalpaturbhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I'll read the translation one more time. The Lord is like a great blazing fire, and the living entities are like small sparks of that fire. So the scenario here is that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is speaking to Prakashananda Saraswati in Varanasi. And Prakashananda Saraswati at that time was the leader of the Shankaracharya Mutt. And he had so many sannyasi followers and so many disciples. And of course, being a member of the Shankaracharya school, that meant he was a Mayavadi, an impersonalist. And the Mayavadis, they're very expert in scripture. They're very scholarly and very proud of their scholarship, generally speaking. Of course, being the leader, that made him inclined even more to being proud. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu externally appeared as a Mayavada sannyasi himself. He had Ekadanda, and he took his sannyas from Keshava Bharati, who was a member of the Shankaracharya school. But the difference between Lord Chaitanya and Prakasananda Saraswati was that when Lord Chaitanya was invited by Prakasananda Saraswati Thakur to discuss philosophy, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't enter into the assembly. He sat in the place where all their chapels were kept, the showroom to the mutt, just like we have a showroom here at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So when you come through that entrance, everyone has to pass through. Everyone, just generally speaking, they dispose their, they place their shoes there. But Lord Chaitanya sat amongst all the shoes, which is considered a dirty place. And when Prakasananda was waiting for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to appear, and he noticed he didn't appear, he sent one of his men to see what was happening. And he came back and reported that Lord Chaitanya was sitting down in the showroom. So Prakasananda was very curious. Why is he doing that? If he's a sannyasi, he knows that cleanliness and so many rules and regulations have to be followed. And so Lord Chaitanya, you can say, this was his plan, that he wanted to speak from a very humble position. And so he was actually practicing all humility as well by sitting in that dirty place. And of course, Prakasananda Saraswati, he wanted to chastise Lord Chaitanya because he had heard and also had witnessed that Lord Chaitanya was singing and dancing. And he was displaying different symptoms of ecstasy. And the Mayavadis don't do that. That's not their etiquette. To go into the public areas and dance and sing and cavort. We can use that word, cavort. He was cavorting with so many inferior, so-called inferior personalities. Because the Mayavadis also, they like to just cohabit with themselves. They all have to be pretty much of the same standard. And they don't like to mix with the public. And of course, their whole purpose, their whole reason for studying Vedanta, studying the Vedas, is to become one with Brahman. They want to merge. They're thinking that this is the topmost form of existence, is to be nothing, to feel nothing, to see nothing, to hear nothing, to be in a form of like suspended animation. Prabhupada once described that the Brahma Jyoti, which is the light, of course, emanating from the body of Lord Krishna, just like we see this painting, this beautiful painting, where we have two realms. We have the spiritual realm and the material realm. And the proportions are that the spiritual realm is 3/4 of the total creation, and the material realm is only 1/4. So it's very nicely depicted in this painting. And there's light everywhere, emanating in the 3/4 of the creation, the spiritual, the superior energy. And then you see this other place, which is depicted in darker colors. This is where we're existing at the moment. We're some another trapped within this confine of this material body. And this material body, of course, is made up of 8 elements, 5 gross and 3 subtle. And it's because of contacting, because we're insignificant in size, infinitesimal in size, that we have the tendency to become covered over. Just like if you ever sat around a campfire on a cold night, and sometimes sparks are coming from the fire. Some are going up, and some are going down, and they're landing some distance from the actual heat of the fire. So that spark loses its potency. Although it's identical to the fire, it's displaying heat and light, but in a very, very tiny way. So because the living entity has the tendency to be covered over, once the living entity has left the spiritual realm, because ultimately we're all parts and parcels of Krishna. And Prabhupada came to the West to teach those people who are very much addicted to voidism and minimalism. Just like in this material society, people are actually quite bewildered. They're not quite sure who they are, of course. That's why they have this covering, these 8 layers of the covering of the soul. And they don't find the information on the internet that easily. Of course, if they type in Krishna, just the name Krishna, then they get the opportunity to come into contact with spiritual descriptions of what their true nature is. And Prabhupada was a perfect representative of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. He came to take everyone out of the darkness of ignorance and bring them to the light. So Lord Krishna states to Arjuna in the 15th chapter and the 7th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Mamai vangso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manak sasandriyanyane prakriti stani karshati. Translation: the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the 6 senses, which include the mind. So the purport Prabhupada describes that in this verse, the identity of the living entity is clearly given. The living entity is a fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, eternally. It is not that he assumes individuality in his conditional life and in his liberated state becomes one with the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada is always emphasizing this particular point, personalism, that we don't merge, that we don't want to do that, that we're eternal fragmental parts. And because we're Sanatana, just like Krishna, we have the same identity as Krishna. We're small fragmental parts of Krishna. So that means that we are parts and parcels of Krishna. But when we become separated from him, when we forget what our true nature is, that it's Satchit Ananda, then we suffer like anything. So according to the Vedic version, the Supreme Lord manifests and expands himself in innumerable expansions, of which the primary expansions are called Vishnu Tattva, and the secondary expansions are called the living entities. So that's why we see in this depiction of the Mahatattva, the material manifestation, that there is Karanadakshai Vishnu, and he's resting in the causal ocean. And from his body, so many universes are emanating, from all the pores from his body and from his mouth also. And in each of these expanded universes, the Lord again expands himself as Garbhodakshai Vishnu. And then when the living entities appear, then he expands himself as Kirodakshai Vishnu, the Lord within the heart. So we understand that the soul is not in the brain. Many scientists and many so-called philosophers, they come to the conclusion, because the brain is the place where the intelligence is to be found, that that's also where the soul is to be found. But it's not. It's in the heart. And it's because the soul is present that the heart is pumping the blood around the body. And as soon as there's no soul, then the heart fails. It stops working, stops functioning. Now, one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, well, when there's a heart transplant, and that heart comes from a dead living entity who's filled in one of these donor cards, organ donor cards, and so does that mean that the living entity gets, or that human being, do they get another soul? No, Prabhupada said. He said, it's just like you're sitting on a soft couch, and after some time, that couch wears out. So then you decide to throw out the old couch and get another couch similar to it, if you like that type of place to sit. So in the same way, when the old heart is taken away, removed, and the organ, the donor's heart, is replacing that old, worn-out heart, then the soul, the same living entity, instead of resting in the old heart, is now resting in the new heart. So we can't become confused, we can't become mechanistical, thinking that this body's just function without any relationship with a higher intelligence. We have intelligence, of course, and unfortunately in Kali Yuga, in this particular society that we're existing in at the moment, the scientist is God. They've no knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or very limited knowledge, but they think that science is a new religion, and the scientists are the new gods or demigods who can give us all the answers. But actually, they don't know how even to create a blade of grass. We have to see with our intelligence, who's the creator? How are things functioning? How is it that a tiny seed contains a giant banyan tree, or the potency of a giant banyan tree? Or how a tiny sperm has the potency to create another human body, a human living entity? That's because of the existence of the soul. So the separated expansions, the living entities, are eternally servitors. They're either serving Maya or they're serving Krishna. And the reason that Prabhupada created ISKCON was to give everyone an equal opportunity to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, the separated expansions of living entities have their identities. As fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, the living entities also have fragmental portions of his qualities, of which independence is one. Every living entity, as an individual soul, has its personal individuality and a minute form of independence. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul. And by proper use of independence, he is always liberated. So it's because of this misuse of our independence. This is what's causing all the problems. We're ourselves creating all the problems. Of course, generally speaking, people want to solve, how to solve the problems. They're coming up with so many different ideas. So many different charities have been formed, and so many different conferences are held. Just like at the moment, one of the big debates is how to stop this terrible slaughter in Syria. Right? All the leaders, the world leaders, are thinking and meeting constantly and thinking this, oh well, if we do this maneuver, or if we get chemical weapons out of the out of the actual theater of war, that this is going to help. But actually, these leaders are blind leaders because they don't know their spiritual authority. So they're blind leaders leading so many blind people. And this is disastrous. That's why there's so many disasters happening. Because we're misusing our minute independence. So because of this, we have to struggle very hard to maintain ourselves in this material world. So it's clear in this verse that the conditioned soul is covered by the material body with the mind and the senses. And when he is liberated, this material covering perishes. But his spiritual body manifests itself in its individual capacity. Prabhupada, you know, he's using so many means at his disposal how to get over the understanding of our true nature. Of course, there are so many books out there. I was out with Vishnubhar Prabhu distributing books, and I met this one worker, and I was showing him Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, and he said, you know, I've just been waiting for years for this type of book to come my way. He said, look, I've got this book in my car. It's called Infinite Self. Now, that's quite confusing to hear. Infinite Self. Of course, it's not confusing for a devotee who's been taught the conclusion of what it means to be infinite. Infinite means without beginning and without end. And self meaning the living entity. So, of course, the infinite self is infinitesimal in size. That's the difference between us and Krishna. That's the difference between the blazing fire and the spark. But that book was completely based that one has to just come to that point of being infinite. But there's more to life than just being infinite. Sat, that's just one third of the understanding. There's the chit and there's the ananda. But most writers and so-called philosophers, materialistic philosophers, they don't have a handle on this spiritual understanding. So Srila Prabhupada is constantly hammering this point over and over. I asked Prabhupada, I said, Prabhupada, you're always constantly telling us we're not this body. Why is that? Don't we just need to hear it once? And he said, no, the point is, you're so stubborn. Stop being stubborn. And the only way to do that is to keep going over that particular point again and again, that we are not this body. Aham Brahmasmi. But spiritual life doesn't just end there. That's just the very beginning. That's the ABCs. Just like this description, the Lord is like a great blazing fire, and the living entities are like small sparks of that fire. This is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, basically spoon-feeding Prakasananda Saraswati with the idea that we eternally remain individuals. And in India, of course, where that is the home, that's the birthplace of impersonalism, voidism, both Mayavad, but also the teachings of Lord Buddha as well. They originated in India. And so many people are just bewildered, even though they may have so much access to so many holy places, just like we have Sri Vrindavan Dham, Mathura Mandala, Jagannath Puri Dham, Dwarka Puri Dham. So many holy places are there. But generally speaking, in those holy places, before ISKCON appeared, just over 40 odd years ago, in India. All these holy places were pretty much occupied by Mayavadis. In fact, Shankaracharya, you'll find his mutt in Jagannath Puri, you'll find his mutt in Dwarka Puri, in so many places. Because people, they just think wrongly. They're foolish. They're ignorant. Prabhupada always used to say that. It's just due to ignorance that people are suffering. So how to get out of that ignorance? So Prabhupada explains that when the mind is in the mode of goodness, his activities are good. When the mind is in the mode of passion, his activities are troublesome. And when the mind is in the mode of ignorance, he travels in the lower species of life. It is clear, however, in this verse, that the conditioned soul is covered by the material body with the mind and the senses. And when he is liberated, the material covering perishes. But his spiritual body manifests itself in its individual capacity. The following information is there in the Madhyandanayana Shruti. Sava esha brahma nishta idang shariram martyang atishrajya brahma bismas pradya brahmana pasyati brahmana shrinoti brahmana vedam sarvam anubhavati. It is stated here that when a living entity gives up this material embodiment and enters into the spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body. And in his spiritual body, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He can hear and speak to him face to face. And he can understand the Supreme Personality as he is. That is so comforting. We just have to perform the right types of activities, the proper types of activities. And this is guaranteed that we will actually see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Just like a student. If a student wants to become a brain surgeon, there's not many openings for brain surgery. It's a very, very sophisticated type of activity. And one has to become a qualified doctor. And generally speaking, at university, you have to stay there for at least 6 years. Not only do you study all the different functions of a brain surgeon and the functions of the brain and the different areas of the brain and the different parts that one part of the brain is causing us to have vision, sight. Another part of the brain is allowing us to hear properly, speak properly. Another part is to assimilate knowledge and some another utilize that knowledge properly. There's so many different fine areas, very finite areas of the brain. So it's not just book knowledge. It doesn't mean that once you've read the books, then you can start operating people's brains. No. You also have to have practical experience. You become an assistant to an expert surgeon. And in this way, you enter into the operating theater and you see firsthand what is going on. Of course, more and more, because people love robots, everything is becoming robotic and removed. Just like even in some hospitals, it's not a doctor that goes around all the wards talking to all the different patients. It's a robot with a television screen. And on the television screen, you can see the face of the doctor. And he's sitting in his office somewhere, in his surgery. And so this robot is making the rounds on his behalf. But some other people feel comfort. They think, yeah, this is great. Why is there need for the physical doctor to be present before me? He's, after all, so busy and he works so many different hours, just like one of the devotees, his name is Sundarananda Prabhu. He's also a specialist, but he's a urologist. And he works at least 80 hours a week, sometimes more, sometimes longer. But if you can train up a robot to represent you, then that can perhaps cut down all the traveling and all the moving around to different wars and so on and so forth. So in the same way, we don't want to turn out to be robots. We want to turn out to be eternal servants of Krishna. And if we follow the prescribed rules and regulations of how to become a perfect servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna, then that's the perfection of this human form of life. So Prabhupada also says in this purport, it's a very, very wonderful purport to this particular part of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text number 7, that the words mamai vansa, fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, are very significant. The fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord is not like some material broken part. We have already understood from the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces. This fragment is not materially conceived. It is not like matter, which can be cut into pieces and joined together again. That's the difference between manipulating the material energy and trying to become a pure devotee. It's a vast difference in the consciousness. So that conception of the material concept is not applicable, because the Sanskrit word sanatana, eternal, is used. The fragmental portion is eternal. It is also stated in the beginning of the second chapter that in each and every individual body, the fragmental portions of the Supreme Lord is present, dehe nosmin yata dehe. That fragmental portion, when liberated from the bodily entanglement, revives its original spiritual body in the spiritual sky, in the spiritual planet, and enjoys association with the Supreme Lord. It is, however, understood here that the living entity, being the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is qualitatively one with the Lord, just as the parts and parcels of gold are also gold. And Prabhupada mentions, he quotes from the Katha Upanishad, this particular quotation. Let me just find it. Anur Aniyan Mahato Mahayan. The Lord is greater than the greatest and smaller than the smallest. And also Prabhupada makes a point about the description of being omnipotent. Of course, the Christians also say that. It's said that in the Bible, that the Lord is omnipresent, that he's eternal, and that he's omnipotent. And Prabhupada makes a very profound statement saying that the Lord means that he is unlimited and simultaneously limited. He's not just unlimited, but he's also limited. And the limited potency is us. We're the limited potency, the living entities, the fragmental parts. Because we are limited, our sight is limited, we can only see a certain distance, and as we get older, we require glasses, or our hearing also becomes limited, sometimes ending in deafness. Our ability to eat, to taste, sometimes becomes limited too. I remember when Tribhuvanath, I saw him for the last time in a devotee's home in Hemel Hempstead, and he was suffering from stomach cancer. And he actually said, you know, when you've got stomach cancer, you can't taste anything. You can't differentiate between something sweet and something salty. He said, everything has a metallic taste. Just like if you're keeping a coin in your mouth. That's all. It's just a metallic taste. You can't taste something sour or bitter or very hot like that. But we saw with our own eyes, we brought him some really nice prasadam. And he said, it's amazing. I can actually taste the difference. I can taste the taste of the vegetables, the taste of the paneer, the taste taste of the sweet rice and the gulab jamuns. So, but generally speaking, when I eat, I can't taste anything. It's just all metallic taste. So this is just an example of how limited we are in this body. And it's not that when we become liberated that we become like Krishna. No. Just like Prabhupada gives the example of the king has his country, or he has his area of of control. And so he has so many servants. In Vedic times, of course, the king had many wives also. And along with the wives, there were so many concubines. Again, but still, there was no competition. Not everybody was wearing the same clothes as the king and was able to do all the functions of the king. He had his citizens that he controlled. So, in the same way, even in this body, within this body, there's the soul. And as long as the soul is there, then the body is also growing hair on the arms, on the backs, on the chest, on the legs. And all these hairs are also living entities. There's also so many living entities residing within the intestine that help to break down whatever we put in our mouths. So, and the nails are growing, and so many things are growing and functioning. But the king of the body is the soul. So that when the soul leaves the body, all the other living entities must leave too. That's why the hair growth stops and the nails stop growing and so many things. This was described by Srila Prabhupada, actually. I remember in Berry Place in 1972, he gave that example. That the soul within the body is like the king, and all the other living entities residing within the body are the retinue of the king. So we have to understand, we have to put things into perspective, that besides this inferior energy, of course, there is the superior energy. And it's the superior energy that we should be aiming for. We should be aiming for going back home, back to Godhead. Now, how do you do that? Well, there's so many ways. By eating Mangalarti sweets prepared by Mother Kalangana, you can go back home, back to Godhead. Because she's certainly got her one-way ticket back home, back to Godhead. Thank you so much for assisting so many conditioned souls in going back home, back to Godhead. But that's actually the function of all devotees. Because that was Prabhupada's desire. When he realized fully what he was meant to do. Of course, he was very blessed because he met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his eternal spiritual master, and instructed him. He said, you're educated and you speak good English. You have a very good understanding of English. So you should prepare yourself to go to the West and preach this message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Western countries. And when you've acquired some money, then print books. And what did he do? He followed those instructions to the letter. Even Prabhupada himself would say, I have no qualification. But if you want to give me some credit, then like the credit is that I followed my spiritual master's instructions to the letter. So that's the simple way and how we can attain perfection. By following the instructions of the founder Acharya. And how do you do that? Of course, you need guidance, because it's not just sufficient to sit down and read the books. Of course, these books, especially the purports, he probably actually pointed that out too one time. He said, it's not the translations of the verses, it's the purports that contain the message of how to go back home, back to Godhead. Then we have to put it into practice. You can't become an armchair scholar. Prabhupada didn't want armchair scholars. Meaning that they sit around smoking their pipes, you know, and watching whatever they're watching or discussing and speculating. No. Prabhupada didn't want us to speculate how we can become or attain perfection. He wanted us to put it into practice. And as they say, practice makes perfect. That's a nice very nice thing, that practice makes perfect. And Prabhupada said, because one devotee asked Prabhupada, said, you know, we know that you're a pure devotee. And how do we become pure devotees? He said, simply by practicing. Chanting minimum 16 rounds a day, following the four regular principles, reading my books, engaging in some practical devotional activities, whether it's deity service, or cleaning, or cooking, or book distribution, or bringing up Krishna conscious children in the family. He told Himavati that just by your sowing, you're going back home, back to Godhead. He told Jamuna, just by your deity worship, you're going back home, back to Godhead. I mentioned yesterday about one little incident that happened in my presence. I witnessed that way back in 1969, where Jamuna was very, you know, anxious to worship Radha Krishna. Of course, they had Lord Jagannath, Shamsundar. He made three sets of Jagannath. He carved them himself in San Francisco. One set stayed in San Francisco. One set went to Los Angeles. And the third set came here, and they're being worshipped, the same deities, in Soho Street, Jagannath Subhadra Baladev. But because Prabhupada was always talking about Krishna, emphasizing Radha Krishna especially, and of course she was very, you know, you can say agitated to the point that she really was looking for Radha Krishna all the time, how we can acquire Radha Krishna. And there was one lady that was in England at the time called Shamamar. Some of you may have heard of her, maybe not, but she was originally from Vrindavan. She was a Brijbasi. And she, apparently, some another, when she was down by the Jamuna, was going to be attacked by some thieves. And some another, she says, because I don't know who the witnesses are, she says that some another Krishna picked her up, and she was able to cross over the Jamuna, fly over the Jamuna, out of harm's way. You know, something quite mystical and quite extraordinary. And this is how she kind of captivated people. Of course, I didn't know at that time that's what she was like. But she was, you know, opening up her own different temples. She had her ashram in Vrindavan. Shamama Ashram is very close to the Krishna Balaram Mandir. It's still there today. And she has another one on Bhaktivedanta Swami Marg, just outside where the gate is, the main gate. To the, you know, arriving into Vrindavan, an arch. And she has places in Africa, East Africa especially, and also in London. So Yamuna revealed her heart to this lady because she thought she was a very, very special person. And she said, I dearly love to get the opportunity to worship Radha Krishna. So what did the Shamama lady do? She presented her with a set of Radha Krishna deities. Now in those days, in 1969, we didn't have GBC, we didn't have very little facility and very few temples. And the way that we communicated with Prabhupada was by aerogram, by sending letters. So Jamuna, because she was so excited that this lady actually had personally presented to her these Radha Krishna deities, because besides the big Jagannath, each of the individual three American couples had their own Jagannath deities, but small ones, about that size. So there was three sets. They all came from the same import store that Malati came across. And so they had three sets of Jagannath deities and a big painting of Srila Prabhupada. And now, of course, there's Radha Krishna. And Jamuna would, you know, very focused, her meditation was offering the arti and offering all the bhoga to Radha and Krishna. So she wrote to Prabhupada about this miraculous thing that had just happened. Prabhupada wrote back. He said, immediately return those deities back to that lady. She's trying to steal you from me. He said, be patient, and you will see that Krishna will reward you with very beautiful deities that you can personally worship yourself. And of course, those deities were Sri Sri Radha London Ishwara. Sri Sri Radha London Ishwara Ki Jai. So that's, Prabhupada is always our well-wisher. You know, of course, sometimes we'll make mistakes. You know, we'll become attracted to this thing or that thing. But, you know, these are like sideshows. They're not the main event. The main event is that we have to focus on going back home, back to Godhead. And there's so many, as I mentioned, so many different devotional practices. It's not limited. Just by cutting the grass, by taking prasadam, by hearing kirtan. There's been a few occasions where devotees have actually passed away in the middle of a rip-roaring kirtan. That's glorious. I mean, it sounds a bit kind of bizarre, I suppose, to non-devotees. But, you know, that's actually, Prabhupada was surrounded by all of his loving devotees. And that's how he left. He left in the middle of a huge kirtan. Of course, there was a lot of emotion. We're feeling so much emotion. I wasn't personally present there. I was in Los Angeles at the time. But when we heard that news, then Rameshwar, he organized a huge memorial service. Over 1,000 devotees came. Half of them had already blooped. Can you believe that? There's about 1,000 devotees in California. And by 1977, 500 of them were no longer full-time practitioners of Krishna consciousness, but because of their love and their attachment to Srila Prabhupada, they came for that memorial service. So, just by touching a book, just like Prabhupada was obviously constantly emphasizing book distribution, because he wanted this knowledge to be out there as quickly as possible, because there was so, we were so much limited, or he felt his time was very limited. At any moment, he would tell us, I can leave at any moment. Don't think I can't. Of course, he was able to translate the Chaitanya Charitamrita completely. He didn't completely translate the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but the essence of everything that he was experiencing in Krishna consciousness, he put into his purports. And of course, where was that information coming from? It was coming from Krishna through the Guru Parampara. So we need to have that connection, that link, that umbilical cord, that connect, just like the baby, the fetus within the womb, is completely helpless and dependent on whatever the mother is feeding. And that goes through the umbilical cord. In the same way, the Guru Parampara is feeding us so much transcendental nectar. And if we're some or another able to swallow that nectar through our ears, just like this is how we drink nectar, through our ears, then we will wake up and realize, yes, I'm not any of these material activities that are going on here. They're all temporary, except for devotional service. That's why Prabhupada emphasized also that we have to remain a society. He created International Society for Krishna Consciousness so that we would get the opportunity to remain pure. And that was the answer that Prabhupada gave to that particular devotee. How do you become a pure devotee? By following my instructions. As long as you're following my instructions, you remain a pure devotee. It's very easy to be a pure devotee in the association of other pure devotees. But as soon as you leave that association, then the tendency is to fall down again. But we should try to restrict our fall downs. I actually tried not to want to fall down. I know sometimes we always think, well, I didn't achieve this in my life. I don't mind coming back again. But actually we should all respect that if we want to come again, let us be born in the family of devotees. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, he prayed those very famous prayers that he wrote and sung. That let me be born even just as a dog in the family of devotees. But that's really the crux of our Krishna consciousness, that we want to eternally serve the servants and the servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna and give up all our foolishness and completely concentrate, meditate, and how I can remain packed up at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. So we'll finish there. Is there any questions or comments?